Then let us give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. To Caesar, or our government, with its tax levies, we owe our fair share of taxes. Give the denarius to Caesar, or our designated fees to federal, state, and local governments. But we must always be aware of how our tax dollars are being spent through our questioning, as we are now, of the equitable funding of police, mental health, and other valuable community organizations. To our employer and their rules and regulations, give them allegiance to the modus operandi, the agreed upon way of conducting business, while we consistently take stock of its fairness in policies and procedures of justice for all. To the shareholders or boards whom we may be accountable, give them our optimum energy and commitment to completing our jobs in an honest and worthy manner, while remaining ever vigilant, knowledgeable of what the inequities may be. To our places of worship, once we commit to a place of worship that is in line with our belief system and our system of justice, we owe them our financial and personal support so that they may have the means by which to operate on behalf of the community, as exemplified by Spiritus Christi Church of Rochester, New York, right here upon whom altar I preach. But to none of the above do we owe our soul. We sell our souls to no one, no governmental agency, no employer, no members of the public who believe that they hold the keys to our personhood, and not even to any church organization. Our souls, our lives belong to us, to no one but ourselves and our divine creator. And what do we give to God? We give God our love and gratitude for the gift of our unity with this divine beloved and with all of God's creations. We give to God our willingness and commitment to be disciples, clothed in our everyday garb as we go about doing our mundane tasks. As St. Francis of Assisi said, preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words. We give to God our willingness and commitment to forgive, to see only the truth, the light of another, rather than perceiving darkness. Through these acts, we join in solidarity with all of God's creations. Now, at this point, if we haven't crossed paths, and thank you to Myra for introducing me, but you might be saying, who is this woman and why in God's name is she up there preaching on Solidarity Sunday? Yes, I am Reverend Barbara Adams, an ordained ministerial counselor. I am a longtime member of Spiritus and go all the way back to the Corpus days. Professionally, I was an educator for over 32 years. In preparing for this talk, I checked some of the stats of the local middle school in which I last worked. This suburban 6th through 8th grade school now has over 60% free and reduced lunch. That's a reliable measure of poverty. Minority enrollment is now 53% of the student body, with the majority Black and Hispanic. As you can see, this multicultural institution experiences high levels of poverty, which results in numerous family challenges that overflow into the schools. I chose to work with those beautiful children and felt called to be a presence for them, not because of their challenges, but because of the love in their hearts that called out to be honored. I feel their presence within me as I say these words. That love needed to be recognized because of the potential of those children that was often hidden behind anger and outbursts driven by the many demands they faced at home and within the community. As the leader of the diversity initiative in my school district, I was trained by the National Coalition Building Institute, or NCBI, now successfully led by Steve Juros. Between Steve and another Rochester community treasure, Thomas Warfield, myself, teams of dedicated teachers and counselors, we trained all junior high school students and teachers, support staff, and administration, because we had the radical belief that all people, students, staff, had the right to be treated fairly and without bias. To provide you with a personal example of how solidarity and lack thereof affected my life, I'd like to share a few aspects of my story. I'm a middle-class Italian-American. I'm the daughter of Carmelo Franco and Maria Francesca Fusaro Franco. I feel their presence as I say their names. I've been in a committed relationship for more than half of my life with my female partner, Roz. We have adult children and young grandchildren whom we love with all our hearts. Let me not leave out the grand dogs and cats. I personally lived a multicultural life and worked within a multicultural community. As a child, I was loved and nurtured within my Italian-American family of origin, as well as my extended family. My father was an immigrant, as was his father and my father's oldest brother. My mother, first generation, her parents were immigrants, as well as her oldest brother. What my sister, brother, and I knew was love, support, big family dinners of amazing home-cooked food. What my siblings, cousins, and I didn't openly experience was the discrimination, name-calling, and lack of respect that my parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles lived through. We were thankfully sheltered from much of that. However, what we did as kids, what we did internalize was periods of denying our ancestry. Some of us Americanized our names in order to fit in and not to be made fun of. We internalized confusion because our parents wouldn't teach us their native language, even though they expressed extreme pride in our heritage. We came to understand that they wanted to Americanize us, so we wouldn't be discriminated against, ostracized, or hurt. We internalized exclusion. We couldn't understand why the foreign language departments in our schools didn't offer Italian, even though there were large Italian-American populations in our towns. The schools, too, wanted to Americanize us. Think of the indigenous children and what was done to them. Anytime kids are asked or expected to change or deny any aspect of themselves in order to fit in, they lose their innocence and a sense of wholeness. Internally, they ask, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with my family? We know this as shame. You see, because one thing leads to another. Additionally, as I matured and began to recognize my emerging natural sexual identity, I came to understand that this was in conflict with my family's mores and the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church. in which I had been raised. I soon realized that because of how homosexuality was spoken about, whispered about, and also preached about from the pulpit, that somehow I was broken, not as good as, that I was going to hell. And the worst sin and fear of all, should anyone find out, was that I would be a disappointment to my family. You see, one thing leads to another. Within the love so easily given in my family was the oft-heard statement, "What would people think? What would they say?" Therefore, I had to hide this perceived flaw and pretend that I was just as normal as any kid on the block. This charade came with a huge cost: the loss of my self-respect and self-worth, the need to always wear a mask, think about masks, the need to always wear a mask of happiness, when in fact what I was feeling was loneliness, depression, anxiety, and fear. The numbing pain of laughing at jokes that actually targeted those like me. And this one experience was extremely painful. I was reading a book written by one of my conservative Christian aunts, and I came across a passage that hit me right in the gut. My aunt referred to homosexuals as reprobates, a reprobate being a sinner who is not of the elect and is predestined to damnation. That passage and reference pierced my heart and my soul. It took years to heal because she had basically disowned me, disavowed me, even though I played at her house with her kids, and she seemed to love me then. As I healed, I recommitted to never giving anyone that kind of power to hurt me or erase my existence again. Aptly, a quote by James Baldwin resonates with me. We can disagree and still love each other, unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist. While working in education as a teacher, I also served as union president within my building, as a trainer, and later an administrator. Through all of those roles, I feared being outed. My job was on the line, as was my reputation and the security of my family. Hiding in the metaphorical closet, I huddled in fetal position for years, listening to colleagues tell stories of the loves of their lives while socializing over lunch in the teacher's lounge. I could only sit there with a wooden smile on my face and bury my story, my pain, and my fear even deeper. In counseling, I came to realize that I was not in solidarity with my truth, with my true self, or as my honey would say, we were not living authentic lives. I had a lot of healing work to do. Thankfully, through compassionate and informed counseling, both emotionally and spiritually, I came to love this person, Barbara Franco Adams, who was created in the image of my Creator. As a non-denominational minister, I welcome anyone who seeks spiritual healing. Through the teachings of A Course in Miracles, I have come to learn how to erase the internal recordings of hatred and disgust, and to replace them with the truth of my oneness with my Creator. As God is, I am. As God is, you are. As you, I was created out of the entire substance of the divine, beloved. You and I possess every attribute of God. If God is love, truth, joy, generosity, compassion, we are as well. So this is some of the raw material from which I drew as I prepared this homily for you today on Solidarity Sunday. I believe that in order to be in solidarity with others, we first need to be in solidarity with ourselves. I had to heal my personal injuries and pain before I could truly recognize it in others. I had to dig down deep to the agony of being denied my life before I could relish the ecstasy of authenticity and honor the authentic lives of others. You see, because one thing leads to another. I came to understand that when we are fragmented, that is not in solidarity with ourselves, we are not in sync with ourself, with our true self, with our Christ self. When we are not in solidarity with ourselves, we have a difficult time recognizing our connection to our Creator, never mind attempting to connect with our brothers and sisters. I came to understand that the work begins within our minds. What we create within our mind, we project out into the world. In A Course in Miracles, we call it cause and effect. The cause of fear in our mind creates a scenario that we then project into our environment and onto others. It is experienced as the effect of an unhealed mind. You see, one thing leads to another. The work within our minds includes taking an inventory of the areas of our lives where we experience fear, as well as areas of our lives where we feel at one with love. Because the light's just beyond the horizon. We're not always going to get it right. As Maya Angelou said, do the best you can until you know better. Then, when you know better, do better. Today, as we give to God our gratitude, we celebrate, honor, and affirm our solidarity with farm workers and immigrants, with our Black brothers and sisters, because Black lives do matter. Solidarity with our Brown, Asian, Pacific Islander, Native American sisters and brothers, our brothers and sisters within the LGBTQ+ community, because love is love. And our solidarity with our white brothers and sisters. As we give to God our love, we celebrate, honor, and affirm our solidarity with those who are abled and other-abled, with those who are incarcerated, with those struggling with substance abuse or other addictions, with babies, with children, with teens, with young adults, with adults, and with elders. As we give to God our compassion, we celebrate, honor, and affirm our solidarity with those who are mentally or emotionally challenged, with those with learning disabilities, with all religious traditions, and those with no religion. As we give to God our awareness of our abundance, we celebrate, honor, and stand in solidarity with refugees, with Mother Earth, with animals and plants, with all beings, and with all of creation. May we be in solidarity in our belief that every person is important, valued, respected, and a vital thread in the fabric of society. May we be in solidarity in our belief that everyone deserves rights, justice, health care, education, safe and affordable housing, food, employment opportunities that provide a living wage. May we be in solidarity in our belief that everyone has the right to pursue their lives in a safe society and to pursue their dreams with the available resources to do so, and are shown expressions of respect. I find no more fitting way to conclude than with a quote from Elie Wiesel. He was a Romanian-born American writer, professor, political activist, Nobel laureate, and Holocaust survivor. And I quote, "True, we are often too weak to stop injustices, but the least we can do is to protest against them. True, we are too poor to eliminate hunger, but in feeding one child, we protest against hunger. True, we are too timid and powerless to take on all the guards of all the political prisons in the world. But in offering our solidarity to one prisoner, we denounce all tormentors. True, we are powerless against death, but as long as we help one man, one woman, one child live one hour longer in safety and dignity, we affirm their right to live." Amen. Namaste. Thank you.